time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of cannabis. And have your specific questions answered by emailing jennifer@cannabama.com or text or call 343-0106. And now, for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Jennifer Boozer Stewart, former owner of Cannabama here in downtown Mobile. Let's get started. We're here on Sweet Home Cannabama every week for over 6 years, almost 6.5 years, talking about all things hemp, cannabis in the state of Alabama, nationwide, all the things, farming, chemistry, manufacturing and processing, retail, consumer information, the endocannabinoid system, what it is, what it does, how it works, how to use it every week for over 6 years. And we're here every Monday night on FM Talk 106.5 on the Gulf Coast. That goes from the Florida Panhandle area to the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And we're live streaming from YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn to bring you the latest. I'm literally sitting here trying not to vomit, if I'm being honest, watching the federal government or the Senate vote on this whole continuing resolution. And so I want to get into current events. I was coming on here tonight to urge you to call your senator, your U.S. senators, and your congressmen to ask them to support Rand Paul's amendment to this CR. Now, the CR, the continuing resolution that would open the federal government back up, has three appropriation spending bills that kind of come along with it. And please forgive me if I fumble some of these details, because again, I'm learning as you're learning. If you know more than me, please let me know. But basically, they have to pass all these bills in order to open back the government. And Mitch McConnell has gone in and snuck in language deep within this ag appropriations bill that would basically destroy the entire hemp industry nationwide. Way worse than even what we've seen in Alabama and other states, where we have been cut off at the knees and 80% of our products made illegal. This would be insane. They want a 0.4 milligram limit per package of THC. Okay, even full spectrum CBD that is not intoxicating in any way, shape, or form has more than that in a 30-day supply bottle. This would basically make it to where the only product that would be legal is CBD isolate. The problem is none of the farmers would be able to grow legally because their plants would not meet these new requirements. So Rand Paul was just on the Senate floor with an amendment to remove that language from this appropriations bill because it would put millions of people out of work and it would hurt so many farmers across the country, not including all of the manufacturers and processors, retail stores like ours, consumer access, but even people in the ancillary businesses like insurance and legal people that provide services, banking, merchant processing for this industry would all just in an instant be made illegal. And this is insane that we're having to do this. Sometimes when people know that they can't pass something the right way out in the open in the sunshine, they like to sandwich it in to these big spending bills. Because no one wants the government to be shut down. I don't want the government to be shut down. No one wants people going hungry without their SNAP benefits. No one wants that. But when you've got people like Mitch McConnell, who, by the way, when he got up to speak on this subject, holy crap, how old is this guy? You could hardly understand him, and he looks like he crawled up out of a coffin. I mean, this guy is the one who actually championed the 2018 Farm Bill for hemp farmers out of Kentucky, his home state. And now he is turning around and, you know, he's not going to be running for re-election. And he looks like he's got one foot in his grave. He's not concerned. He's already gotten whatever benefits there are to get in this situation. And he doesn't care who it hurts. And Rand Paul, also from Kentucky, is the one senator who is trying to stop this. So I came on the show tonight with information for you, and you still need to contact your members of Congress Because after this leaves the Senate, I don't know if it will be part of the version that goes to the House, and if there's a way that we can still amend it in the House. I'm sure there is. But if you can, go to the Alabama Cannabis Coalition Facebook page, go to my Facebook page, the U.S. Hemp Roundtable Facebook page, the Hemp Farmers and Industry of America Facebook page, website. They have pre-filled out email language for you. There are ways on congress.gov. You can look up who your senator, your U.S. senator and U.S. congressman are if you do not already know that. I saw Tommy Tuberville down there on the floor just a few minutes ago. And Katie Britt is in the room as well. And I think that they voted against allowing this amendment that would take the hemp language out, which is not great. He even specifically mentioned, Rand Paul specifically mentioned that it was worse than what happened in Alabama, which is pretty sad. But yes, go to those groups and find out who your U.S. Congress and senators are. Email them, call them. There is a number for the Capitol switchboard. It's 202-224-3121, and they will connect you to anybody's office. Let them know that this is not okay. We do not want this. It's part of this fiscal year 2026 spending bill and the continuing resolution to open up the government after 41 days of being shut down. And of course, swirling around in all those very vital services is the decimation of an entire industry. And so I'm still waiting to hear the tally on the vote. If anybody wants to text me and let me know what happened so I can concentrate on our guest tonight, that would be very helpful. I'm going to turn my phone upside down and stop looking at it out of the corner of my eye. But I'm sweating bullets in here, guys. I'm rooting for Rand Paul. I think in a room full of 100 senators, for one senator to be willing to stand up and say this is not okay, it takes a whole lot of courage, because I'm sure the people that don't understand what this means, and people are making jokes, you know, oh, why would we care about this if people are going hungry? Well, we're not trying to pull a fast one. Mitch McConnell is. And the reason that it matters is because families like mine all over the country will be put out of business, will be rendered bankrupt, and will have to go without. And the farms across America who are already hurting and suffering will be crushed. And they don't understand. Yes, your family might be suffering because you haven't gotten your military paycheck or your SNAP benefits, but there are millions of families who are also facing losing everything they've worked for all of these years. And so it's not just about what people want or, you know, God forbid. And of course, there's weed jokes galore on here because people have no respect and they don't know what they're talking about. But this is a big issue. So please find these posts. Go to, like I said, U.S. Hemp Roundtable. You can find that information. We've posted several things. I am going to be the point person. The Alabama Cannabis Coalition is largely focused on state issues because we are still hoping to repeal HB 445 here. But this is one of those moments where we have to stop and go, okay, if this happens, then what's going to happen to the rest of it? You know, what's going to happen to the rest of this situation? And we don't know. We don't know. And it's very scary. I personally can testify to all of the joys of suddenly being put out of business, suddenly having no income, and, you know, having a garage sale to sell all of your belongings in order to hopefully stay afloat. And it's not okay. And if it were to happen across the country, I cannot imagine the devastation there. This is an industry already worth tens of billions of dollars. And so something has to be done. Please reach out to Tommy Tuberville, to Katie Britt, reach out to Schumer, reach out to Thune, all these guys that are in positions of power on this issue, and tell them that we do not want this hemp language in the final version of the appropriations bill that is passed as a continuing resolution to open the government back up. If they would just agree to the amendment, Rand Paul would stand down and let the process continue. but hopefully he'll be able to stand his ground. If we don't win the vote tonight, it's not over. And even if it does eventually pass, there is a moratorium for 365 days. So the rules would not go into effect for another year, which would buy us some time. But man, we lose the argument that the federal law says this, and we need to at least, comply with that. When we come back from the break, we're going to meet Jason Ortiz from The Last Prisoner Project. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody. I believe that I just read that the amendment has been tabled. So anyway, on to the show. Tonight I want to introduce to you Jason Ortiz. Jason is the Director of Strategic Initiatives for the Last Prisoner Project, focusing on policy and advocacy for incarcerated individuals affected by drug laws. He is currently focused on cannabis legalization at the federal level through the Cannabis Unity Coalition, the nation's largest cannabis advocacy coalition. A cannabis justice advocate since he was arrested for smoking on the way to school at age 16, Jason co-founded the Minority Cannabis Business Association and helped draft Connecticut's 2021 Cannabis Equity Framework. He is the former executive director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, where he trained students to combat the war on drugs, and has served as the policy director for Connecticut for Accessible Psychedelic Medicine and president of the Connecticut Puerto Rican Agenda, where he mobilized support for the independence of Puerto Rico. He currently serves as the chair of the policy committee of the Puerto Rico Psychedelic Collective. Jason, welcome to the show.
He's having an audio problem.
Oh, well, I think we lost him. That's okay. We're going
to
get him back real quick. Yes, he's trying to call back. Let me check my phone here to make sure that I have the right information.
Here we go.
All right, I think he's back with us. Jason, welcome to the show. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, there we go.
All right, sorry. Hey, it's been a heck of a day, and now it's apparently going to be a heck of a night.
Yeah, I know. It was like right as it was time to go, too. It's like, all right.
That's okay. Well, okay, so tell us, I just read your bio in case you didn't get to hear that. Tell us who you are, how you became an advocate.
So my name is Jason Ortiz. I'm originally from Connecticut, from Norwich, Connecticut, actually. I currently live in Puerto Rico, but I am currently today in Connecticut. And Connecticut is where I first got arrested for cannabis possession as a teenager. And so when I was 16, I was walking on the way to school with a couple of friends. We were smoking on the way to school, and somebody called the security on the way. And so as soon as we stepped foot on campus, we immediately got surrounded by all these big security guards and tiny golf carts. And it was a very strange moment. Like, I was just very confused.
Right.
Like,
the golf carts happening? Probably would have thrown me off.
And I mean, like, big guys in very small carts, and, like, three of them.
That's
right?
Funny.
And so, like, I've been in trouble, but, like, nothing too serious before. So it's kind of like, whoa, like, what is going on here?
Right.
And so, you know, they were like, well, we know that you were smoking weed on the way to school. And so, like, you know, that's not allowed. So we got to, you know, get you in trouble or whatever. Right.
Right.
And so I went into this little room where I was going to wait, thinking, like, okay, I'll get suspended for a few days. No big deal. And then the police came in.
Oh, wow.
And that's when everything changed. I was kind of like, whoa, like, wait a minute. Like, do I need a lawyer? Like what is happening here?
Right. Right? And yeah, every cop show you ever seen goes through your mind.
Right, exactly. But, like, so then they searched my bags, and I had more weed in my bag. I had two small, maybe like half gram joints that were wrapped in like pink strawberry papers, right? like a child, right?
Right.
And so they were like, well, we found this in your bag. Like, this is possession, and you're with another person who's underage, so that's going to be possession with intent to sell to a minor.
Because
my friend, so two of us were 16, the other one was 15. And I had just turned 16 like a month before that, actually. It was a couple months because I'm mid-September. And so it was kind of like intent to sell. Like, what are you talking about? And they're like, you're under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. And went to put cuffs on me.
Wow.
And that was like, when somebody puts chains on you, right? Like, all of a sudden, drug policy becomes a very real thing and very serious. And in the moment, I actually freaked out. I was like, no, I'm not.
Right. This is a mistake. Call my mom.
I didn't do anything that wrong, right? And so I got arrested. I got thrown out of school for the rest of the year. Mm. I had to go to court countless times. And I had two union working, you know, public sector parents that, like, yeah, they worked full time, but they were not making a lot of money.
Right.
And, like, one of the big things that really impacted me was, yes, like, the court system was horrible. And I got to see who was getting arrested, who was getting, you know, convicted, who were the folks that were the prosecutors and who were the defendants, right? Being very clear,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of rich white folks and a lot of poor black and brown and poor white folks too. And you could tell.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
And so that's when I really got a lot of my class consciousness, like out of that situation of like, nah, man, I was in it with all different colors of people. We were all getting in trouble
right.
for the same thing, but it was the money my parents had to pay for lawyers that really, like, was brutal, tens of thousands of dollars, so their 16-year-old kid didn't go to prison for
right.
years and years, right? And so it was very difficult for my parents, and, you know, I was pissed ever since. And so I've been a cannabis activist since that day. Luckily, I did have some time to stay at home and do research, because the internet was around in the year 2000, and I learned a few vital phrases that would forever change my life.
Okay.
The school-to-prison pipeline, right? Because the school-to-prison pipeline was what I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
The war on drugs.
Yep.
And selective enforcement,
mm.
right? And so those three phrases would kind of shape how I looked at law, how I looked at society, and that it really wasn't that, like, myself as an individual was hurting anyone or doing anything wrong, but that there's this big political machine out there that
right.
is not only trying to make money off of incarcerating us, but also politically disrupt different communities, right?
Right.
And, like, we've seen that for decades, right? Like, the original, you know, start of the war on drugs was to go after the hippies and the Black Panthers, right? If you go all the way back to Henry Anslinger, right? Harry Anslinger.
Right.
It was the same thing, right? It was the socialists and the communists, the jazz folks and the Mexicans, right?
The Mexicans. So, like, stinking old Mexicans.
That's why we use the word
yep.
marijuana, right? Like, marijuana is a Spanish word.
Yep.
And so, and it's a positive word originally, but we'll have a conversation about that another day.
Right.
But, you know, that's when I started to more fully understand policy, law, the court systems. And so eventually I was able to go to the University of Connecticut, where I joined as a student this organization called Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and SSDP.
Yeah.
Taught me not just to be mad and, like, protest, but how do I actually change the policies
right.
so that this doesn't happen to other people?
Yes.
And so that's when I became more of a policy advocate in that space. I would eventually graduate from UConn. I learned a lot there for sure. I'm very grateful that I went. And one of the things that I learned while I was there was that other activists had changed the Higher Education Act federal aid elimination penalty, which was a really long way to say if you got arrested for weed, you couldn't get Pell Grants.
Oh.
But because people changed that law before I went to UConn,
wow.
I was able to go to get financial aid. So to me, that was a moment where I realized that a very small change to a law can have a huge impact in a lot of people's lives. And so that's when it really cemented that I wanted to be a policy advocate. And then from there, I would go on to do lots of other types of work. I actually did some work trying to end the death penalty nationally and other kinds of organizing, but then became part and one of the founders of the Minority Cannabis Business Association. I would eventually go on to become president, where we worked a lot on cannabis equity policies,
mm-hmm.
figuring out exactly how we can make sure that the new cannabis industry isn't dominated by big corporations and instead has the folks that were most impacted by the war on drugs
right.
leading the industry, which I believe the people that were most impacted are those that were incarcerated.
Absolutely.
Right? And so, yeah, that's a controversial opinion, though. There's lots of you out there that disagreed with me along the way, but eventually went on, helped to fight the good fight in lots of different states, helped legalize here in my home state of Connecticut, would later go on to be the executive director of SSDP, and now I work for the Last Prisoner Project, helping folks get out of prison and to pass laws that expand eligibility for release. And so, you know, from being arrested to coming through the system and going and working in the advocacy space, to now making sure that what happened to me doesn't happen to other folks, I was able to make sure that in the Connecticut legalization bill, anyone under the age of 18 would not be arrested for cannabis possession. They'll
really?
Have to go through juvenile court and lots of other things. It's not like they don't get nothing, but
right.
definitely the exact thing that happened to me won't happen to anyone else. and now get to spend my time figuring out how we're going to make sure all the folks that are locked up in prison right now, as we build these industries, are able to get freedom, reunited with their families, and become full members of society.
Do you ever wonder if you hadn't been surrounded by big guys in golf carts that day, where your life would have gone after
that? I think I would have been a pastry chef. I was definitely real, real big on that. I was off into genetics and like biology, so maybe I would have been a breeder for, you know, cannabis cultivation facility also.
Right.
But yeah, I do. And it's kind of funny because sometimes I think like, well, if we legalize, then young people won't have to deal with the system like I did, and then they won't become activists. But I
right.
think I would much rather they have the choice to become a musician or a pastry chef or whatever they want to do than have to deal with what I went through.
Right. Can you even imagine a world where we don't need to have cannabis advocacy work anymore? I can't. I haven't been in this nearly as long as you have, but holy crap, I'm tired. And it's like,
I mean,
there's no
imagine it. Yeah.
there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. And just like this vote I've been trying to watch, you know, it can change on a dime. We've had this access to the hemp plant for 7 years, and now it's like it's 1937 all over again. What the heck is happening? It's like nothing good we did matters. It just matters that we're hurting somebody's bottom line.
I look at it as this is like the Empire Strikes Back part of the trilogy, right? Where like we had a tremendous amount of success in the last 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between 2014 and now, where there's half of the nation has legal cannabis at the state level.
Yep.
And the powers that be were like, we got to shut this down. They got equity programs giving out reparations to people. We got hemp businesses flourishing. And now we can't let this continue. And now we're seeing the response from those that would seek to continue to oppress us. And
right.
this is what it is, right?
Right.
And so, in lots of different ways. Massachusetts is looking at a ballot measure to repeal the industry in Massachusetts. And,
yep.
you know, there's all kinds of...
Isn't it Ohio? Ohio, they let the people vote to legalize, and then the legislators were like, yeah, but we don't think you know what you did, so we're going to fix it.
Yep.
It's crazy. Because here I am in Alabama, we don't get to vote for anything. I'm like, put it on the ballot. Put it on the ballot. Because it would be a landslide. We don't even get that. But even in a state like Ohio, where they do get that choice, we can't let you choose. You know, that's just for decoration. It's insane what's happening on every front as far as medical is concerned. I mean, here in Alabama, we passed medical 4 years ago. Still sitting here on go. I know growers with freezers full of product. There's nowhere to sell to. And the program is stalled out. I mean, one step forward, two steps back. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more with Jason about Last Prisoner Project. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sweet Home Cannabama. We're here every Monday night at 7 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5 and live streaming on YouTube and all the social medias. We're talking tonight with Jason Ortiz from The Last Prisoner Project. Jason, I want to pick up where we left off before the break. Tell us exactly what is the Last Prisoner Project for anybody listening who is not familiar.
Sure. So the Last Prisoner Project is a nonprofit organization, a 501c3, that helps to empower folks that are currently incarcerated for cannabis crimes, achieve their freedom, so get out of prison. We focus primarily on folks that are incarcerated,
mm-hmm.
get reunited with their families, and become full members of society. Now, we do that a few different ways. We have a whole legal department that works both at the state and federal level to actually provide direct legal support for folks that are incarcerated. So that could be helping them with their paperwork,
mm-hmm.
Talking to them while they're inside to keep them abreast of like what's going on in the world and just give them some company,
mm-hmm.
right? And then we also, when folks get out, support them financially and their families so they can get back on their feet. And then part of what I do is then provide a community for them to become advocates and tell their story about how they got incarcerated to Congress people, to state legislatures, to other advocates, to the press, so that their time served, right, their suffering that they have to go
right.
through can be put for something good to make sure that other folks don't have to deal with that. And eventually we legalize cannabis at the federal level once and for all for the entire country. Right. And so
right.
my role as a director of strategic initiatives is to come up with campaigns that help us advance all the different causes that we fight for, which include full legalization. We also work on collateral consequences, so things like expungements, making sure folks can access housing, all of those kind of laws that eliminate any of the other penalties aside from criminal justice penalties
right.
that you might get for a cannabis arrest, right? And
right.
we're doing a bit better now, but things like being able to vote, being able to get your license, right? There's like actually a lot of collateral consequences for getting a drug conviction of any kind, but even specifically a cannabis one. And so I work on the policy side quite a bit, although I have other folks that have like write laws for us, right? But I'm the guy that has
right.
to go and pressure politicians that when they say, no, we don't want to do something, I got to figure out a way to bring more people there, try to change their mind, go on the press and talk about it, right? And, you know, it's interesting because I focus now primarily on the federal level, although lately that has been quite a challenge to get anything done at the federal level. But the
right.
reality is without federal full legalization, we're going to keep putting people in prison. So we're never going to get to the last prisoner if we don't stop putting people in prison. And I would say, aside from the policy piece, the other thing that's important is what's called clemency. And that is when a president or the governor pardons somebody who is incarcerated
right.
and they can pardon, which just forgives the offense, which doesn't necessarily change your actual sentence. But what we really want is a commutation. And so a commutation is where the governor says, we're going to cut your time served to as long as you've been in there, and then you're able to get out early. So that is like the gold standard for us, is to get a commutation from a governor
right.
that then shrinks their sentence and they're able to get let out. Now, that is only doable, generally speaking, by the governor of a state, or there's a pardon board that is empowered by the governor, or the president of the United States.
Right.
And so there's only 51 people like in the country that we can actually work with on that.
Right.
And that's the only way to get people out fast, generally speaking, outside of going through the sort of review process that, depending on which state you have, some states have a review process that you can get let out early, and many don't at all.
Right.
And so it's really down to the governor. So on the policy side, expanding eligibility for folks to get out, also dealing with things like probation and parole, trying to shrink how long you have to be there.
Right.
And then on the more executive branch side, working towards pardons and commutations.
It's interesting. I mentioned this to you today, and you said you hadn't seen it, but there is a new documentary out on HBO Max called The Alabama Solution, and it's specifically about the prison system in Alabama. And I've watched part of it. I haven't finished it, but it's brutal from start to finish, every part that I've seen and everything I've heard about it, because Alabama definitely has some of the worst prisons in the country from what everyone else outside of Alabama says, you know. And I know that recently there was a news article about how parole eligibility, people being eligible for parole, has gone down in Alabama like 72%.
Wow.
And we have a nice new mega prison named after Governor Kay Ivey, and another one on the way in Alabama. And then, and interestingly enough, possession of hemp flower is now a Class C felony in the state of Alabama, with a punishable up to 10 years in prison and $15,000 in fines. Fentanyl possession is a lesser felony, and possession of illegal marijuana is a misdemeanor. So as far as prisons go, I'm sure that you see the conditions, the situations in different states. Are there a lot of states like Alabama? I know a lot of southeastern states have big prison systems like this and have laws that are very punitive. But is that the case across the country, or is that unique to certain areas? I mean, what are the worst things you've seen as far as cannabis laws and prisons and things like that across the country?
So it's definitely not specific to Alabama, although it is pretty heavy in the South.
Yeah,
like we do see that the South, especially the Southeast, has some of the harshest drug penalties.
Right.
And that is pretty consistent all the way across the board. We have a tremendous number of prisoners that are in Florida and Texas. mm-hmm. right? And they're just, they're bigger populations, of course.
Of course.
We have more people, right?
Right.
We also have folks like Kevin Allen, who is in Louisiana, who is one of our constituents, who got a life sentence for selling 2 grams of marijuana to an undercover cop.
Wow.
He was able to reduce it after like 10 years to only 40 years. In prison for selling 2 grams of cannabis to an undercover cop, who he actually refused several times. And then once the cop came back again, he was like, okay, fine, I'll sell it to you. And they arrested him right there.
Wow.
He lives in the same district in Louisiana that our current Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, lives. Right.
And tell me what area of Louisiana that is. That's my home state.
the New Orleans area, yeah.
Okay, yep. Okay.
Right. And so, yeah. And so, you know, and this was, you know, 20 years ago. I think he served like 26, 27 years at mm-hmm. this point, right? But he is incarcerated in the same place that, you know, the guy that's blocking cannabis policy from moving in the house as well. And so, but, you know, again, like places like Florida and Texas, tremendous amounts of prisoners, specifically
right.
for cannabis policy. Texas also tried to pass, right, the hemp ban that would have
SB3.
Also made hemp
mm-hmm.
possession a felony. Where, and in Texas, you could have got charged with both. So, like, if you got caught with cannabis and they couldn't tell what it was, they would charge you with both of them and then let the court figure it out afterwards. And so,
wow.
Yeah. Gotta love that, right? Like, oh, we can't figure out how to do this. So
we're going to get you either way, though.
Right, right.
If we can't get you on the big one, we're going to still get you.
Right. And then, you know, in Idaho, though, like, that's another place that's not in the South, but Idaho also has a tremendous number of folks in prison per their population. And is also making it where they're making the penalties harsher, not easier.
Well, right? Yeah, I have a friend in the industry who is from Idaho, and she mentioned to me not long ago how they have to go to the neighboring states because there's no legalization there. There's no nothing there.
Right, right. And so Idaho almost passed another law that would said if you brought any cannabis from another state, it's its own charge. Right, like trafficking across state lines.
Wow.
And it's also going to be pretty harsh because tons of us go to Washington.
Yep.
Like it's right on across the border, right? And
yep.
So it's definitely one of the situations where the South has a lot of work to do, but it's not the only place. Like we definitely
right.
still have the Dakotas that don't have any legalization, right?
Yeah.
So there's a number of more conservative states, generally speaking, that are still working on it.
Right.
But even places like Pennsylvania, right? Pennsylvania is a spot that's been talking about legalization for a long time, but upwards up through 2023, they were still in the top 10 numbers of cannabis arrests that have happened. And the FBI reported recently, because you want to know the FBI's numbers, right? But there's at least 200,000 cannabis arrests in 2024, right? So spread out across the country, although concentrated in the South. And that tells you that the war on cannabis is nowhere even near over. We can absolutely go backwards, and we are seeing exactly that happen, both with some of these new industry bans and with the hemp votes and the hemp bans that are going all over the place. So we still have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of states that have made tremendous progress. There are some states that are getting close to zero, at least for possession.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are working towards making sure we identify the states that are cleaning up and, like, doing really well. But it's without a doubt, you know, there's a lot of states in the South and in the northern Midwest that have a long way to go.
Now, I get why the South, because it's the South. And a lot of people say, oh, it's the Bible thumpers and the Christians. And it ain't us. It ain't us. This is driven by other industries, this including the prison industry, because that private prisons are a big, big, mm-hmm. big business. You know, the federal government pays the state. And privatized prison, they have a quota of beds that need to be filled at all times or they don't get paid. And there's a lot of incentive to get people into prison and then to keep them. And because cannabis, it's legal in some form or another in over 40 states as medical and then recreationally, like you said, half the country. And then at one point, hemp was legal in every state. And so
sure.
that provided an entirely new pool of people to draw from because, hey, it's still federally illegal, you know, and you've got to contend with people like big pharma, big tobacco, big alcohol, big prison, you know, and things like that. And there's a lot of industries. I thought it was interesting in all of this hemp brouhaha that some of the alcohol industry is actually urging Congress not to ban it because they've got those THC drinks now that they're clinging to for dear life after losing, you know, such a percentage of their sales nationwide. But then companies like Kraft and Nestle and other of the big giant food processing companies are wanting to ban it. And that's crazy to me. Why would Kraft and Nestle get in on this fight in any way, shape, or form? You know, what does that have to do with them? You would think they'd be happy we might all have a little bit of the munchies. But then again, you know, most of the foods that come from those companies are highly addictive and full of chemicals and keep us inflamed and sick, and they're all related. I mean, it's this never-ending trying to watch your back, but you're watching every side on top and underneath, too, because everyone has an incentive to get in on this, whether they're pro or against, and so many other industries have been disrupted in some way, especially by the hemp industry. But we all know the battle between medical cannabis and the pharmaceutical industries, too. I mean, it's crazy. People, because of the prolific access that we do have now in states like Alabama, I hear it every single day. Well, I'm going to smoke anyway. I'm going to do it anyway. I don't care what the state says. When we come back from the break, we're going to finish up tonight with Jason Ortiz from Last Prisoner Project. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Jason Ortiz of the Last Prisoner Project. Jason, I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned a lot of aspects of what Last Prisoner Project does. I want to touch a little bit and just say that expungement of records, to me, is a big deal, because you're right that there are other consequences besides the days and hours you spend in a cell. There are massive amounts of life-altering consequences to having a drug conviction, inability to get a job, own a gun, vote, all the things that you talked about. But what about the effect on the families of prisoners? I mean, do you guys interact with their families a lot? I imagine if they're incarcerated and their families are out in the world having to deal with the absence of fathers and providers and people in their lives that are there because they had a plant and somebody didn't like it. So what do you see are the biggest effects on the families of prisoners?
I mean, it's devastating, right? Like, it could be a mother or a father that is incarcerated. And not only is that one of the breadwinners of the family, but to have to grow up and see that your parent is stuck in a cage over a plan really rattles a lot of families, right? And we do work with a tremendous number of families, and I've had the honor of working side by side with family members. Sometimes it's a spouse, sometimes it's a child, right?
Right.
It's a mother. So like Mitzi Wall, she was the mother of Jonathan Wall, who was sentenced to 10 years in federal prison for his first cannabis offense. Mm. And so we got to work together to advocate different places. You also have folks like Nicholas Huang, who is the son of Edwin Ruiz. And Edwin was sentenced to 40 years in prison for a trafficking charge where they didn't actually find any cannabis on him whatsoever. He was just simply ratted on by somebody else that said he was the mastermind. He was definitely not.
What?
So he got sentenced to 40 years, and he's currently served 27 of those years.
Oh, my
His
God.
Son, Nicholas, is 28 years old.
Oh.
So he has spent his entire time as a young person, and now he's an adult, with his father incarcerated for a cannabis charge that happened nearly 30 years ago.
My God.
So it is devastating to see mothers, spouses, children having to just deal with the fact that this injustice happened and not really know exactly what to do about it, right? And so we're there to provide support for them, not only to help them figure out how to channel their anger into something productive, but to also make it something that will literally help that person get out of prison, hopefully, because they are also some of the most effective spokespeople on the issue when they go to a state legislature and say, you're thinking about making this a felony. My dad has been in prison for 30 years because of a crazy law that was made 30 years ago.
Right.
You're going to be doing this to countless families. So things like this new hemp law that is coming out is going to make a tremendous number of incarcerated family members that have to deal with their loved one, their sole provider, their dad, their mother. And every year that a person spends in prison, that's a birthday that they don't get to be there for, that's a first kiss or a first boyfriend that they don't get to meet.
Christmas, Thanksgiving,
birthdays, Thanksgiving, when somebody passes away, right? So, like, all the folks that are incarcerated also have parents and grandparents
right.
and may not be there when their parents
And the divorce rate of, you know, the spouse on the outside looking at being a single parent or whatever for however long, that's a lot of pressure on someone, you know, to
for sure.
be tempted to move on and find someone that they can help do life with. I mean, that's devastating. I can't imagine. Well, and also the danger of being in these prisons.
Of course. That's, definitely.
Having watched the Alabama Solution, just the danger of being there because there's so much else going on. There's a lot of corruption in the prison system. And you're
That's
talking
an understatement, yeah.
Well, they filmed this entire documentary over 10 years, mostly with contraband cell phones. And how do they get those cell phones? You know, how do they get the drugs? How do they get any of the things, you know? I mean, there's a lot of things that go on that are awful. And I can't imagine being somebody like you at 16 smoking a joint on the way to school or 25 or 35 or whatever, and you end up in a cell for 10 years and maybe you have to fight for your life. You know, maybe you're beaten half to death.
Inside.
You know, and then the trauma of being stuck inside and missing out on life and having to worry about your safety day in and day out and all of that corruption happening. I mean, I would imagine that in order to survive, you know, you get put into situations where you know, if they don't want to parole you, then they're going to make sure you're put in a situation where you violate the rules of the prison and end up getting more time. I mean, it seems like a never-ending loop. I mean, is that an accurate statement?
I mean, I would say it's a purposeful scheme to keep the beds full as long as possible with as many people as possible to make as much money as possible. Right. Like, there are individuals that are specifically pushing to keep this happen. It isn't an accident, right, that it's
right.
happening this way.
Right.
Right. It is definitely a purposeful operation to make sure that certain folks make money off of incarcerating other people, which has got to be one of the lowest ways to make money ever imagined.
Right.
And it is happening, you know, at a mass scale. But I think it is important to know that it's like there are particular people that are doing this. This isn't something that just like happened because there was a problem and folks were trying to do the right thing. No. Like, people
right.
are very specifically an industry, right? The prison industrial complex is an industry.
Right.
It's there to make money. It is not there to keep us safe. It is not there to rehabilitate folks that are in prison, right? And so it is there as a money-making operation. And so that is why we have so many really harsh drug laws, because drug users tend to be not the most violent prisoners that would end up in prison. And
right.
so they are a good source of financial, you know, security, knowing that if we fill up a jail with a bunch of, you know, cannabis users, they're going to not want to violate again. They're not going to be as violent as some other folks. And so
right.
we make, like, cannabis folks and other folks that use other drugs as well are often targeted because they are an easy target for these
right.
industries.
Well, and everybody in there who is violent knows that if you got busted for weed, you're not a threat to them. And they can easily abuse you or threaten you
yeah.
or get what they want from you, because what are the chances somebody who got convicted of a weed charge is going to be top dog in the
right.
yard, you know? I mean, come on, these people. I mean, for the most part, that's why people use cannabis, because it does just chill you out, and it's
sure.
it's not a crime against another person. You know,
yeah.
and even with harsher yeah. drugs, other drugs that are highly addictive and can kill you, having been an opiate addict, I could tell you, the only people that drug addicts are hurting the most are themselves and the people around them, you know, in their families,
sure.
the emotional toll
yeah.
and things like that. But yeah, they wouldn't be violent offenders, and the ones who are there, who probably have life sentences and nothing to lose, that
sure.
seems like lambs to the slaughter to me, you
sure.
know? And
but
I imagine
I
it's cheaper to keep someone in prison than it is to bank on the fact that people are going to continue to break the law. That's a variable
sure.
that they don't have as
I
much control
think, though,
over.
Before we wrap up, that like it's not all doom and gloom, right? Like, there are people that have been organizing. I very much encourage folks to find the different organizations in their state that are pushing to help prisoners get out. right? We are seeing a reduction in the total number of prisoners, but it's because we put together incredible movements to fight back against all of the insanity that we saw as we were growing up, and we are not done yet. Like, the cannabis space has made tremendous progress, but the fight is not over. Not only do we still have 26 states that still need to actually have some form of adult use, the fight at the federal level is ongoing, and we really won't see real justice and real criminal justice reform, real clemency and folks actually getting out of prison until we do this at the federal level. And so I do encourage everyone to not just contact your local reps, but contact your federal officials. It's going to be an uphill battle, but we have a national movement that has over 70% of support of the public. It's the most popular issue in American politics.
Wow.
What we haven't been able to do is turn that public support into a scaled up movement powerful enough to actually push on the federal government. And because we haven't been able to do that, we're seeing folks go backwards now with like the hemp situation, and we haven't seen a cannabis bill pass in a few years. And so I do encourage everyone to check out the lastprisonerproject.org. We're part of the Cannabis Unity Coalition. There you saw the video at the beginning of this video, where it's a number of different organizations, upwards of 20 different organizations that are really pressing at the federal level. And we need your help. We need every single congressperson to hear from you, to let them know that you want to make cannabis policy a priority. And then when we all do that at a scale necessary to really push Congress, we will finally end the war in our community once and for all by legalizing at the federal level, releasing all cannabis prisoners, and eliminating all the collateral consequences of a drug arrest.
Yes, and it can happen. And I understand that, being an advocate for my state, the complacency of the people, because the power is really with the people. And this is an election year, guys, in the state and nationwide.
And
it's an election year.
Every single congressperson is up for re-election. Every single one of them. So find yours, go flip over a table and ask them, why aren't they doing more on cannabis policy?
That's right. And we can find you. What's your website to make sure our listeners know where to find Last Prisoner Project?
Yeah, it's lastprisonerproject.org. And you can find us on Instagram. I'm Jason J. Ortiz on social media. Happy to connect with folks. If there's somebody that wants to do this work, please let me know. Happy to tell you a little bit more about how to get it done, how to connect with folks in your state. Also want to shout out Antoine Mordekin. I know he's an Alabama favorite. He's one of my homies from my MCBA days. And so
I'll
give him a shout out on the way out too.
Thank you so much, Jason, for being with us tonight. We've got to go. Thank you for being with us, everybody. God bless you. And God bless Alabama hemp. Good night.